Blog Talk Radio.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon for the sitting outside. If you walk through Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil down in the hole.
Welcome to this latest edition of the NFL Show on this 21st of January 2013. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 30 minutes as we discuss Championship Sunday in the week in a league where no contract is guaranteed. As always, 347-215-6180 is the call number. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or hit me up on Facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. Happy Martin Luther King Day out there to everybody. I hope you enjoyed your day. Certainly, it was a big day down in Washington D.C. with Inauguration Day. But first and foremost, it was about Martin Luther King and celebrating his legacy and what he did for every single American walking the face of this earth, basically. So I hope you enjoyed your day from that standpoint. Crab cakes and Golden Gates. Super Bowl 47 is set. Baltimore will take on San Francisco. San Francisco has already been installed as a 4-point favorite. That line dropped from last night. It came out at 4.5 points. It will drop. It dropped to 4 points. And I expect it to continue to drop up until game time, probably to around, I'd say, about 3.5 to 3 points. It's a pick 'em game, as far as I'm concerned. So, but I, you know, listen, they want the money. The bettors want you to want the action, so they're not going to start off with a 3-point. They're not going to start off San Francisco or Baltimore on with a pick 'em, a 3-point favorite. So it was understandable that they start off San Francisco with a 4.5 point favorite. San Francisco certainly deserves to be favored in this particular game. How they got there, that's where we're going to begin with, as always, on the NFL Show, the game of the day. Atlanta falling to San Francisco 28-24, a very entertaining, very competitive game. I give Atlanta a lot of credit in this game. I picked them to win this game on the Cyril Quinn Wake Up Show, but I have to be honest with you, in my heart of hearts, I didn't think that Atlanta was going to win this game, and I did not think that they would play as well as they played. But I was pleasantly surprised on in terms of how well they played. They jump out 17-0. Julio Jones has, 100 yards in the first quarter. Matt Ryan's throwing darts all over the place. San Francisco looked completely befuddled with the Atlanta passing attack. And, 17-0, Atlanta, San Francisco gets the football, 3rd and 7. It's 3rd and 7 at their own 42-yard line. And if they, if they give the ball back to Atlanta, down 17-0. The way Atlanta, the defense was at that time, at that point in time, the San Francisco defense was exhausted. They were exhausted and looked confused, to be honest with you. If they give the ball back to Atlanta, 17-0, that game is over. That third and seven completion, third and seven conversion, 27-yard completion to Vernon Davis, who had a huge day, had over 100 yards receiving, was, to me, the single biggest play of the game. And there were a few big plays, to say the least, but that one stood out. It led to a San Francisco touchdown. They were able to stabilize the game at 17-7, even though they got down 24, even though they gave up a touchdown before the half and got down 24-14, they were, you know, they were well into that. They were well in that game, and it certainly, you know, down 10 points is nothing, especially when you're getting the ball back in the first, you know, first part of the second half. So they were in pretty good shape, even being down 24-14. You know, 24-0, 20-0, it would have been a death knell for San Francisco, even despite the fact that Atlanta has had a propensity of blowing a couple of big leads. You saw what happened last week against Seattle. You know, 24-0 on the road, 20-0 on the road would have been too big of a hill to climb for San Francisco. But they were able to, again, stabilize the game with that touchdown. I give Kaepernick a lot of credit. I thought I was more impressed with Kaepernick in this particular game than even the Green Bay game. Because, see, the Green Bay game was easy. Okay, the Green Bay game was easy. He was basically running free, doing whatever he wanted to. Had no Green Bay defense gave, you know, no resistance. You know, 400 yards total offense. This game, he was efficient. Had like two rushes for really 23 yards. Atlanta did a good job of containing his rushes. And the bottom line is, San Francisco did not try to run him too much because, you know, it basically was one of those situations we're going to give you, we're going to take what the defense gives us. And San Francisco did an excellent job of that. Kaepernick on the day, 16-21, 233 yards, and one touchdown, no turnovers. No turnovers. And that was a very important stat in this particular game. San Francisco won this game because of their patience. You know, you're down 17-0, loud, you know, one of the loudest venues in the NFL. You know, crowds going crazy. Atlanta's feeling good about themselves, but they stayed the course. Kept, you know, stayed with the run. Ended up running for close to 150 yards. Gore had a nice day, a couple of touchdowns. Ended up having three rushing touchdowns on the day. And again, a lot of teams would have panicked in that situation, being down 17-0 on the road. But again, they kept running the ball. They did not get away. They did not deviate from their game plan whatsoever. And it turned out. And it turned out it certainly turned out well for them with winning the game 28-24. If you're Atlanta, you're going to be kicking yourself for the next 6 months because this certainly was a winnable game. I thought, you know, there were three major plays in this game, three huge plays that to me decide this game. One, the third and seven completion to Vernon Davis for 27 yards, which extended the drive with San Francisco being down 17-0. The second play was the Matt Ryan fumble. When the ball was snapped. Now, at that point in time, Atlanta's up 24-21. They drive. They seemingly have a good drive going, and At worst, I feel like they would have gotten at least a field goal to go up 27-21, forcing San Francisco to get a touchdown. And then in part, you know, them getting the ball back, only a field goal, you know, even if San Francisco scores a touchdown, a field goal wins you the game. I mean, listen, I could live with the interception by Matt Ryan. Man, Matt Ryan was phenomenal. I mean, got through for almost 400 yards, set an NFC Championship record, 396 yards passing. So it's hard to knock him. But you can't, even an interception, I'm not going to knock the interception. He threw the ball 42 times. Chances are one of them was going to get picked against that defense. But you can't have a fumble on a snap. That's the kind of turnover that you just can't. You can't have in this type of game. Those are kind of mistakes. That is basically a self-inflicted wound. And you can't have that in the NFC Championship or in a conference championship or in a Super Bowl, or in a playoff game in general. Those kind of turnovers, again, he'll be thinking about that until August, basically until training camp, because that was inexcusable. I thought the snap was a clean snap. He just you know, couldn't handle the ball. I for whatever reason, I don't know if the ball was had perspiration on it. I don't know. It just one of those plays that just boggles your mind because he had, you know, he had a tremendous game. He had an excellent game for the most part, and just couldn't handle a snap. The third play to me was big was the Ahmad Brooks pass breakup on 3rd and 4. It was 3rd and 4. Atlanta's at San Francisco's 10-yard line. Roddy White was wide open. If he does not break up that pass, there's a chance at worst. The worst part of it, at worst, Atlanta would have a first down. At worst, maybe Roddy White even scores a touchdown on that play. But at worst, you would have been in first down. They only needed 4 yards at that point. And then the last play, I didn't understand the last play to cross to Roddy White. Even if he caught that, he looked like he would have been short. To me, you know, Julio Jones, Tony Gonzalez is money in the red zone. So I don't understand why they didn't go to Tony Gonzalez or Julio Jones on that particular play. You know, that's, again, that's one of those things you can second guess to the gals come on. But, again, it will be a long off season for Atlanta. But Atlanta got my respect without question. They played well. I was not high on Atlanta all year long. If you've been listening to the show, I basically dismissed them, despite the fact that the gaudy record that they had over the course of the season. But they certainly earned my respect. They just, you know, have to fix that defense a bit, and they'll be fine to be right back as a contender to go to the Super Bowl next year. As total yardage, again, Atlanta, 477 yards of total offense. San Francisco had 382. Huge game for Matt Ryan. Julio Jones was all over the place, 11 catches for 182 yards, made a phenomenal catch on his second touchdown, had a couple of touchdowns. Tony Gonzalez, and probably his swan song, played very well, had a touchdown catch. Vernon Davis was tremendous and continuing a theme for Atlanta in terms of tight ends, just lighting them up. We saw what Zach Miller did to him last week against them, the Seattle tight end, and Vernon Davis continued that trend as he was just catching passes all over the place and was wide open on a couple of them. So Atlanta, San Francisco advances to the Super Bowl. Certainly no surprise. Before the season, they were amongst the favorites coming into the AFC playoffs. I think they were the favorites. As in terms of getting to the Super Bowl, they are a team that's absolutely loaded. Talking about a team that has 6 first-team All-Pros and 3 second-team All-Pros. They have 9 All-Pros on their roster. The team is stacked. They've done an excellent job of drafting players in recent memory. They had the best offensive line, the best front seven in football, great punter, and possibly a budding star at quarterback. So a lot and probably one of the top 3 coaches in football. So they have a lot going for them moving forward into Super Bowl 47. When we return, is it the end of an era? We'll talk about the Ravens and Patriots on this edition of the NFL Show. We'll be right back. After the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show, as I look back on the conference championship games, San Francisco and Baltimore. Of course, the Harbaughs will face off in Super Bowl 47. John had a little bit easier time getting to the Super Bowl than certainly Jim did, as Baltimore handled New England 28-13. This game, to me, came down to, I feel like the physicality of Baltimore just overwhelmed New England. And I feel like, New England just got exposed for being what it really is. You think about New England, there were two plays. The one play I think turned this entire game around was the Wes Welker drop at 13-7. New England was driving. At worst, let's say they can possibly get a field goal and go 16-7. At that particular time, Baltimore's offense was basically non-existent, hadn't done much of anything. Now, they would get hot in the third quarter, and Flacco would take over the game. And as a matter of fact, in that ensuing drive after New England, after Welker drops the pass, they punt the ball, and then Baltimore goes 87 yards down the field. Flacco, the Caldwell, opened up the offense for Flacco. He went shotgun, passed just about every play of that drive, or at least six of the nine plays were passes. And after that, the floodgates opened, and Baltimore completely took over the game. They were going to score three straight touchdowns, and that was all she wrote. Again, New England had a bad break with Aqib Talib leaving. Bolden got loose after Talib left the game with the pulled hamstring. But the bottom line is, Baltimore was a better team from top to bottom than New England. New England, and I'll get to this, New England basically have been getting covered for their by Tom Brady and their offenses and their offense for all their, for all the warts that they have on that team. They have been covered, but with their offense scoring close to 600 points. But again, it's been the same recurring theme for New England since they won the Super Bowl. They've had this dynamic offense in the regular season, putting up 500 points and 30-plus points per game or during the regular season. But when that offense gets to the playoffs and their losses, their offense has been basically non-existent. I mean, you look at two Super Bowl losses against the Giants. They score 14 and 17 points. They scored 14 points against Baltimore a couple of years ago when Baltimore handled them in Foxborough 33-14. They scored 21 points at home against the Jets a couple of years ago after putting 45 on them late in that particular season. The offense has been non-existent in the postseason. Last year against the Giants, scored 17 points. In the postseason, the offense has been basically non-existent since they won the Super Bowl in 2004 season. And what the reason is for that, who knows? I think part of the reason for that is the lack of, they don't have anybody that can challenge you down the field. I mean, you can pound their receivers with those short, on those short passes. Obviously, missing Gronkowski was a big, and they really missed Gronkowski last night. Six times they were in Baltimore's 25-yard line and came out with one touchdown. But to me, this was all about, we can rip New England till the cows go home and Brady and Belichick. But this was about Baltimore, and this was about Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco has been, to me, one of the most scrutinized players, quarterbacks in the league. All he's done throughout the course of his career, his five-year career, is win. So all he does is win. He's, only Otto Graham has won more games to start off a season than Flacco. Flacco has won more road playoff games than any quarterback in history, six, and he's 8-4 in his career in the playoffs. Now, mind you, he needed this game. He needed to get to the Super Bowl, because when you get to three AFC championships, you need it. By the time you hit number three, you need to win that one. So he needed to win this game, but he was tremendous last night. Clearly, he outplayed Brady for the second straight year in Brady's home stadium. He outplayed Manning last week. Now, listen, he'll never have Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady type accuracy. He's not that type of quarterback. They don't run that kind of offense, short passes. They're a team that's going to attack you down the field they go deep as much as any team in football. They're going to challenge you with down the field passes. So his completion percentage is never going to be in the high 60s. But Flacco, I thought Flacco last night was, you know, especially throwing with the conditions, and the wind certainly played a factor in this game. I thought he was tremendous. No turnovers, the three touchdowns, and once they opened up the offense in that third quarter, he completely took this game over. And you can absolutely win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco as your quarterback. Now, you want to call him I'm going to get into that whole elite thing. I think it's one of the most overused words in football, elite. Who's elite, who's not elite? I would think that you would have to win a Super Bowl to be considered an elite quarterback. But the bottom line is you can win a Super Bowl with him as your quarterback. The second story in this game to me was the New England defense. The Baltimore defense. The Baltimore defense, during the course of the season, have been taking a lot of flack, and rightfully so, hadn't played well for the most part. But ever since Ray Lewis coming back in the playoffs, even towards the latter part of the regular season, they've really played great football. In the playoffs, think about it, they've held New England and Denver, two of the better offenses in the league, to 34 points on their home fields. And I thought that was a vintage last night. That was a vintage Baltimore defensive performance. That was the Baltimore defense that we've seen over the better part of the decade be one of the premier defenses in the NFL without question. I mean, they knocked the New England receivers around. They punished the running backs. You saw the hit by Bernard Pollard. And if you're a New England fan, have you seen enough of Bernard Pollard to last a lifetime? I mean, goodness, he's injured basically half your offense in regards to Brady, Gronkowski, and Wes Welker a couple of years back. So, as a Houston Texan, of course. But Bernard Pollard, I thought, was tremendous last night. He put the hit on Ridley, knocked Ridley out of the game, and forced a fumble. At that point, when that happened, that basically sealed the deal for the Ravens. But even before that, I thought the Wes Welker dropped, all the air went out their balloon, and New England's offense did not threaten Baltimore's defense anymore after that drop. But Bernard Pollard was tremendous. The Baltimore defense was great from start to finish because they didn't get loose. Baltimore's offense did not get loose into that third quarter. They only scored 7 points in the first half. New England should have had a bigger lead, and that's another thing. New England should have been up by at least 16-7. They mismanaged the clock at the end of the first half. Brady and Belichick, I don't know, Brady and Belichick just were not on the same page as far as clock management. They had a timeout in their pocket, and at 10-7 or at 13-7, don't even get off a field goal. At the end of the half, it was 10-7. They should have gotten off another play. That's what I meant to say. They should have gotten off another play or two to try to possibly go up 17-7. And instead, they were forced to kick a field goal to make it 13-7. So they mismanaged the clock with that. From that standpoint, again, they should have had another play to throw the ball in the end zone. I don't know. Again, it was miscommunication between Belichick and Brady, or they just lost track of how much time they had. But they clearly should have got off a shot. Excuse me, should have got off a play where they possibly could have went, and they possibly could have went and try to score a touchdown. There's been a lot of talk about Brady. And again, that last night's game was not about Brady. It was about there was nothing Brady could do about the Baltimore defense. Baltimore has played Brady, has defended Brady as well as any team in the league over the past 4 or 5 years. And just look at his numbers. Look at his numbers. He has more interceptions than touchdowns during his time in the last 5 years against the Baltimore defense. So I'm not gonna sit up here and rip Brady. for his performance last night. He did not play well, but to me that game was about the Baltimore defense and about Joe Flacco emerging as possibly a star quarterback in this league. But certainly, as always, when a team of that of this magnitude and a coach and a quarterback of this magnitude lose, and it has been, you know, 8 years since they won a championship, they're gonna take some hits, and they certainly took a couple of hits, took some hits last night. I mean, this morning with Brady and Belichick. I'll say this. I blame Belichick more than I blame Brady for the current state of the franchise as far as them just not having a championship caliber defense. I mean, how many draft picks has Belichick missed on? That secondary has been awful for the last three or four years now. Just, you know, Belichick is supposed to be, you know, the defensive genius. And he's the one calling the shots. I mean, there's not a pick that, you know, trust me, there's not a player that's on that team that has not been handpicked by Belichick or without is on that team without his blessing. Trust me. Even when Peyote was a general man, was general manager for them. So I blame Belichick from that standpoint. As far as Brady goes, again, Brady, despite the fact that he's 7-7 in his last 14 playoff games, remember, he started out 10-0, okay? And 17-7, he still has the most playoff wins in the history of the sport. And he is still amongst the best of the best as far as quarterback goes. At worst, he's the second-best quarterback in the league behind Aaron Rodgers. The problem is for New England is he can no longer cover up all their warts and win the championship. Or he no longer has no room. There's no room for error for Tom Brady. In order for New England to win championships, Brady has to be super in every playoff game. He has to be great in every playoff game. That used to be not the case. When they were winning championships, Brady could be workmanlike or even somewhat have not played great. He didn't have to play great all the time because they had a championship caliber defense. They had a all-world kicker, Adam Vinatieri. They had great special teams. You know, he didn't have to be super. He did not have to be great all the time. You look back at some of those playoff performances when they were winning championships, you know, Brady wouldn't put up spectacular numbers. Now he wouldn't turn over the ball. He would not beat himself. They would not beat themselves. But he wouldn't be. You know, he didn't have that many. He didn't have 300-yard passes. He didn't have that many 300-yard passing games or 4 or 5 touchdown games in those playoff runs. But that room for error is gone because they're not the same defense, and not even by a long shot. And the bottom line is they are not as physical as they once were. And that's a big deal in the NFL these days. Look at the teams that have won Super Bowls in the past 3 or 4 years, whether it be Pittsburgh. When Green Bay won, they were a physical team. The Giants are a physical team. You're not winning a Super Bowl with finesse anymore. I think those days are done. You have to be physical on both sides of the ball. You have to be. Look at the two teams that we're going to see February 3rd. These are two of the most physical teams in football right now. And New England used to be one of those teams. New England used to be one of the more physical teams in football. People used to call New England players dirty in terms of on the offensive line and defensive line. That's not the case anymore. They've gone to this, you know, high-powered fast break offense, and you know it looks good in the regular season when you're putting up 550 points and you know Brady's putting up these gaudy numbers, but in the playoffs against a quality defense, against a physical defense, it has been exposed. So it'll be very interesting to see where they move forward in terms of how Belichick rebuilds that defense. Should be an entertaining Super Bowl. Certainly, we have plenty of time to chew on the Harbaughs, and certainly one of the more dramatic storylines in Super Bowl history. Having two brothers go at it, go at it with their team. Two of the top coaches in the league go at it, and yeah, it should be a great game. Again, it is a pick'em game. As far as I'm concerned, I go 50-50 either way in terms of who's going to win the game. You made me choose right now. I probably have to lean towards Baltimore. But, again, San Francisco is the most talented team in the league from top to bottom. That game is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I do expect it to be a much better game than the last time they played on Thanksgiving 2011, which was, you know, a snore fest, to be honest with you. So I do expect more action than that particular in this game than it was in that particular game. It's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the NFL Show. We'll be back in later in the week with the Cyril Quinn Wake Up Show. Have a great evening. So long.